live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Another Monday Night Football double dips on the way. Willie Ramirez hosting the show as he's got two VIP packages to give away. That is all you can drink beer, all you can eat for two of those. How about that? For Sunday football viewing, a future Monday night, a Thursday night. You can probably nudge them to use it on a Saturday. Why not, right, for college football? We got a great college football weekend coming up. I love where college football is right now. A lot more balance. I'm not going to say I told all of you, but I did. Quarterbacks are everywhere now. So you're seeing turnaround programs, Willie. And games aren't as easy as they used to be because there's difference makers all over all of these conferences, and it's setting up what's going to be an unreal playoff. Hell, the UNLV-Boise game on Friday night, you also have, well, my school, Rutgers, is at USC, which is funny. It's an 11 o'clock Eastern start, so that's a tough one for fans. But you also have a Syracuse-Pitt showdown, and, you know, there's a lot of ACC teams that have really good records that if they keep winning, they're going to force the rankings committee and the CFP committee to give real strong consideration to, you know, some schools years ago that Pitt and Syracuse had their glory days where they were top, you know, 7 and 8 program. We're talking going back to like 76 and, you know, whatever it was, 83 with Dan Marino, but going back to Tony Dorsett days with Pittsburgh. So a lot of people are getting a shine right now around college football, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that we are, there are some teams that are in their, we're heading into week 8 of the NFL, which means there are some teams are heading into week 9, week 10, because you had week 0,
yep,
right? And then week 1, week, is it week 2 of college is when NFL starts. So, I mean, we are in the thick of things. The college football playoff is right around the, I mean, the first rankings are right around the corner. So, and let's not forget, you talked about UNLV-Boise this week in terms of big college football, but this week the Golden Knights return home. Four big games for a major homestand. They open the season 3-0. They go on the road and lose three straight. So very important games. We're going to be talking about that in a few minutes.
Yep. Jack Williams from the Sun is going to be up in less than 5 minutes. Turnovers are a big story of every football team season, and there is no better evidence to that than the Raiders and UNLV. Josh Dubow, who's a stat master, never gives opinions, just stats. Raiders turnover margin is minus 13. Can't win. That's 32nd in the National Football League. The next team is at minus 9. They are minus 13.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're, you know, in a struggle with someone else at 32. They're 32. UNLV is actually number 2 in the country in college football at plus 12. And the craziest stat is when they've turned the ball over, the defense has been able to hold. When the other team turns it over, UNLV takes advantage of it, either with the kicking game. And by the way, Caden Chittenden from Faith Lutheran, Mount West Conference Freshman of the Week, again, I think third time, Special Teams Player of the Week. He was 4-of-4 on field goals. He was also consistently banging the ball into the end zone on kickoffs. This stat's crazy. They are plus 67 points for turnovers, points for and points against.
Gotcha.
Plus 67. I think it's, I'm going to do the math incorrectly. I think it's 73-7. The other team has scored 7 points off of turnovers.
Right.
UNLV scored 73.
I get you.
I mean, you know what a difference that does in a season? Especially,
yeah,
especially
yeah,
in like.
We're witnessing.
In an 8-point victory.
Yeah. That's, well, and as we talked about before, when you talk about finding ways to win, yeah, having resiliency, never giving up. They know if they're down by 14 points, a couple turnovers, we're right back in this, guys, because they're getting them and they're capitalizing. So the belief is there. Raiders, I mean, I got to mention
real quick. The other one is the ability to have someone to block punts. Ricky White is now, he blocked another. He's blocked 3 punts and altered 2 others where they couldn't get the punt off. It was funny, I was on the sideline watching the game. I try to get, you know, video clips, real quick ones, of what's going on. And they set up for that, Oregon State did, for a punt. UNLV finally got a third down stop, and it's right in front of me. And I'm putting my camera up because I'm like, I think something might happen here. You just get a feeling sometimes on the punt, and some other cameraman's like rolling in front of me. I'm like, bruh, it's UNLV and their punt block unit. Get out of the way. And then as he's walking in front, then, you know, Ricky White comes in and blocks another one. Those are game changers. And with the Raiders, their special teams, in terms of the punting and the kicking, is awesome. But they're making field goals, but the problem is they don't finish enough drives. They just don't score enough touchdowns. And yesterday was a prime example. Got to score some touchdowns, right? Because the Rams ain't great. And yet the Rams were able to stay in control of the game because all the Raiders could put up were field goals.
We've been saying this for years. That offense, I mean, if you weren't getting it done with the offensive guru who was a dictator in Josh McDaniels, it's going to be really difficult with a defensive-minded coach and an offensive coordinator that obviously isn't getting it done this year with AP and Luke Getsy.
I love the unpredictability of football in the NFL and in college football. Like this week, Florida State is playing Miami. The line is not what it was during the summer. The seasons have been very different. Speaking of that, let's bring in Jack Williams, covers Vegas Golden Knights. Jack, you're familiar with Florida State, right?
Yeah, I was there last year, and then I got out right at the right time.
could you have seen what's happening this year?
Honestly, no. Going to practices and seeing what they picked up in the portal and stuff like that, you would expect that they would have, you know, a great team in front of them, especially with DJU. But then it just shows that you can't build chemistry. You can't just force chemistry. You can't just have all of that just come together immediately, and that team just can't connect with each other. I've heard from my friends they are a great practice team, but just can't put it together on Saturday.
Jack, you also covered the Aces this season, so real quick, one question. Did Alana Smith foul Breanna Stewart or not?
Oh, God, you're going to get me into this. the way I saw it, it looked like it was all ball. It looked like it was all ball, in my opinion. I was surprised with how quick it came back. It was kind of a movie-type deal with the liberty of Breanna Stewart's been missing all these free throws, and she makes those two right at the end of regulation. And I tweeted out that the leads are just righting themselves. I don't think it was the right call, but, you know, the result's the result. It's cool to see the Liberty win, but, it was a chaotic ending to all that.
One thing for sure is, before that foul, Breanna Stewart walked her way into lane, that's for sure, because there were 4.5 steps before that ball hit the ground, or hit the court. So, I agree with you. I mean, there were so many signs to, you know, and I mean... It's kind of wild because I don't know how much I want to say it was scripted, it was fixed, but I mean, I watched the pregame show. I think you actually liked or retweeted, but that the pregame show was all Liberty that I saw. Their guests, Spike Lee, Carolyn Peck, who does color commentary for the Aces, got up and did her coach's thing. It was all on the Liberty. Engelbert's wearing the Statue of Liberty on her outfit. The Nike commercial was ready to go with the Statue of Liberty and everything. I mean, now, disclaimer, we don't know if they had one ready for the Lynx. Stewart, by the way, wasn't the only one who traveled before the foul. Jonquel Jones foul. She had taken 3 steps just before that. And after letting them play as hard as they did, both teams, in the first few quarters, in the waning moments, that's the call you're going to make and then review it and stick with it? I don't know. It seemed like this is our time to really put a cap on a storybook season. New York Liberty, first ever championship. Let's roll with it in the big market where the WNBA, obviously, front office. I mean, it just seemed perfect setup for them. And I don't blame Cheryl Reeve for her complaints in the postseason, in the postgame press conference.
Right, no, I completely agree. I mean, it was completely warranted by her. I mean, the calling down the stretch was just brutal. And I mean, I back reference a comment Becky Hammon made after the Chicago. Someone asked him about New York, and Becky Hammon said, again, months ahead, and they weren't even playing the Liberty. She said, in order for this league to do well, the Liberty have to do well. And just saying that this is such a big market and this is such a big pull. And, you know, it kind of just, it just lines up with everything. I don't want to put on my tinfoil hat, stuff like that, and get into everything and stuff like that, but it kind of does make sense. And there is a lot of weird decision-making, especially the dress by the commissioner. That's just strange in general. But, yeah, it is what it is, and it's time to move on to the next season.
Well, let's get on to the Golden Knights. You and I we've had our conversations up on Press Row at T-Mobile, and you're going to be on every other week with us anyway. So as we get closer to the expansion draft, we can discuss why my thought process continues to move forward with Kelsey Plum ending up in Golden State. That said, let's talk about the Golden Knights. 3-0 to start the season. They go on the road and lose 3 in a row. Why can't the Golden Knights close out a game?
Oh, man. I mean, it's just kind of there's layers of things on top of it and stuff like that. I mean, at first it looks like that's kind of the thing they're working with now, that there was no depth beyond that first line that we saw in those first two games. You know, we saw the first line contributing. Yes, we saw other guys pop up, but most of the time that was on the power play and stuff like that, especially the second line, which was non-existent. And then, you know, that seemed to kind of fix itself in the Capitals game, and then it just, you know, it's not the Capitals game, excuse me, the Panthers game, kind of fell apart again. Like you said, they've just been able, they've been struggling to close out. And the big thing is it looks like I hate to say it again, it looks like it's kind of chemistry of outside of the first line of guys just, you know, trying to get a little bit more familiar with each other and playing with each other and stuff like that. And then really just opposite of what we saw in those first three games. They really just kind of start reeling when, their opponent scores on them. In these first three games that we saw at home, it seemed like, a minute, half minute would go by and the Golden Knights were already putting another one in the net. The PA announcer wouldn't even get out the goal scoring announcement and the goal horn was going off again. It seemed like it was almost the exact opposite in these road games where, their opponent would respond really quickly and they wouldn't be able to, cap it off. Like, the Capitals scoring 3 in 3 minutes. I believe it happened again in the Tampa game. We didn't see too much of it in the Florida game, but, I mean, that's another thing, too. It's just, like, how do you respond? I think response is a big thing in these games, too. And they just, they just struggled to do it.
Yeah, you talk about the chemistry with the lines, and I think that's well and good, but the fourth line has been doing what it's been asked to do. I mean, I think scoring goals is secondary as opposed to the first line, in terms of keeping the puck in the offensive zone, forechecking, wearing down their top defenders, and getting the top line back out on the ice as fast as possible to attack a tired unit. I think that correct me if I'm wrong, but right now one of the concerns has to be getting that hurdle line going. And getting that chemistry built up and getting some offensive production. We're now 2 weeks into the season, 6 games in. We've been saying, well, give them time, that the offense will come. When is it going to come with that line?
Right. No, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I've been so hyper-fixated on this whole hurdle thing going on just because it looked like they, from the beginning, taking this timeline all the way back to when they acquired him, it looked like they were taking on just kind of a larger contract for a guy that is good. But, it was just a lot of money coming out of it. And you're like, all right, well, we'll see how he produces. Like you said, in those first few weeks, how's it going to go? And it hasn't picked up. It hasn't gotten going to where it needs to be. When's it going to happen? Bruce Cassidy, it seems like every other week, it's some other guy that's being moved up into that second line, saying, okay, well, maybe this will work with Hurdle. Maybe this guy will work with Hurdle. The big thing that we've heard over and over again is, like, well, Hurdle likes going down low around the net and stuff like that. And Alexander Holt likes doing that, but we haven't seen production from that. That second line has been almost, non-existent. The points that they are picking up are from the power play and stuff like that. And that, might be the biggest glaring issue of all. This is supposed to be your second line in command behind that first line that has almost no issues this entire season except for that Florida game where it was the only game none of them recorded a point, which is just impressive to say in itself. But, I mean, that second line really needs to step it up. You need to find that equation fast. I know both Bruce Cassidy talked about, this not being, meltdown crazy time, like freaking out time and stuff like that, but maybe heightened concern. Maybe you do need to start sweating a little bit about, like, why isn't this second line working? Why is this guy that we're putting a lot of money into, a lot of trust into, why isn't he producing? And, that the emphasis should be there.
Speaking with Jack Williams from the Las Vegas Sun, covering the Aces predominantly, or excuse me, the Golden Knights. Aces are now done with their season. Follow him at Jack G. Williams on X. Hill and Samsonov, one of the things that these goalies need help with, and that is not letting the pucks get turned over. We're seeing, you know, sort of miscues and silly mental mistakes that's allowing the opposition to streak into the zone and get odd man rushes, and it's putting the goalies sort of on their back foot. But who have you been most impressed with? Hill's had more of the starts, but in terms of the poise, has it been Hill or has it been Samsonov, or is it too early to gauge based off what the mistakes are being made in front of it?
Yeah. I mean, the big thing that I think a lot of people kind of passed over in that last game is that Samsonov made, you know, almost 50 saves against the Panthers. You know, he was really put to work in that game, and we really haven't seen, you know, such a shot-heavy performance so far this season. You know, and he's had a ton of pressure coming into him here. He's really on kind of a show-me kind of contract. Came from Toronto, where that's just a hard market to play in, period, in general, and so much pressure and stuff like that. So I think he puts a lot of internal pressure on himself. In my opinion, he has looked a little bit more poised. In my opinion, he hasn't got, like you said, as many of the starts, but, you know, he has looked a little bit put together. He's really been put to work, especially in that Florida game. That's kind of what the game, even though they lost in overtime, I was kind of sitting there, I'm like, you know what, you know, this is a sound performance by the goaltender. It's another one of these games that just got away from him. And, like, this dude's making up to 50 saves out of him. There's flowers for sure. You know, Hill, you know, nothing jumped out crazy for me right now. He's not doing anything incredibly wrong. You know, he's not doing anything that, you know, really jumps off the page for me and stuff like that. You know, also, you know, going back to Samsonov a little bit, you know, he let in some weak goals in that Florida game as well, which is a little alarming, but, you know, Hill stayed the path. Maybe that's what you kind of need right now. You don't need your goaltenders to be doing, you know, going through crazy hoops right now, especially when you're struggling to break out the puck and all these turnovers are happening. You just need someone to stop the puck. You know, in my opinion, when we're talking about just, you know, going and pressing a little bit more, it's been Samsonov, but Hill's just been kind of straightforward. You know, he's the starter and kind of a guy that's supposed to jet out a little bit more, but, you know, he's been getting the job done. But, you know, Samsonov, you know, has impressed me a little bit more.
The Los Angeles Kings are in tomorrow. They have played their first six games on the road. Buffalo, Boston, Ottawa, Toronto, Montreal. They go to California and play Anaheim, and now they're leaving and coming back to Vegas before they open a two-game homestand, go back on the road, and then two more at home. 3-1-2. I don't know whether it's a good sign, a bad sign that they become used to it. It's the end of a seven game season opening road trip. What's your take on this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, you got to feel fatigued there, especially talking about these early games that the Kings play. I mean, a 8-7 loss to the Senators in overtime, and then you turn it around and you're playing the Maple Leafs, and that's a 6-2 loss. But then you put together two really strong wins, 4-1 over the Canadiens, 4-1 over the Ducks. That's a lot of hockey, like you said, that span there. And, you know, coming up to it now, again, you know, playing just yesterday, I mean, the fatigue can definitely set in. The Golden Knights have, you know, been traveling a little bit more, have had a little bit of a break as well. That's where you're going to need to catch them with the fatigue a little bit more. Who has the fresher legs? Who's going to be getting the pucks more? Who's going to be moving a bit quicker? That's where that kind of comes out a little bit more. I believe the Kings got the better of them in the preseason game. I could be wrong, but, you know, another competitive matchup from what I remember. You know, I kind of give the edge, you know, a little bit more, in my opinion, to the Golden Knights here. They played well at home. I don't know, early on, you know, with these three wins, three losses, if this is a home and away type of deal. But, you know, the Golden Knights have looked good at home. There's no reason to say that they're not going to play well at home. You know, getting a little bit fresh, a little bit restart. Trying something new, again, with the line combinations and the pairings on defense now. You know, you're trying something different. You know, I give a little bit of edge to them in this game, stuff like that. However, the Kings have shown, you know, early on, playing a lot of games and getting some interesting results. You know, they could be, you know, a little bit of a pressure cooker team here as well. So, you know, I'll give the Golden Knights the edge here.
All right, we got a quick 30 seconds before we let you go. I'm sure you're out of practice today. I wasn't able to get out there. Did we learn anything new about William Karlsson, and did we learn anything new at all, any sort of news from Bruce Cassidy?
Yeah. William Karlsson was in a non-contact red jersey, so he is back on the ice for the first time since preseason camp. Kasky is ruling him out for this next game, but I think he's going to be waiting to see his decision. He's still waiting on his decision for the Ottawa game further down the line. And then talking about things that Kasky's on this any different from what he's been saying, no, it's just been the defensive pairings are different. That was the big thing that came out of practice. Some changes on the second and third line, but nothing crazy that really jetted out of practice other than those lineup changes which have been going on for the past few weeks.
All right, follow him at Jack G. Williams, Las Vegas Sun, beat writer, Golden Knights. Make sure you follow him for all the best coverage. Jack, I'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, thank you, Willie.
Right. There he is, Jack Williams. This spot's brought to you by our friends at Oasis Bar and Grill on Decatur, south of Trop. Great local bar with a rocking menu, sports on all the time, 24-7 breakfast, anything from a Reuben to a French dip. Like I said, the breakfast is dynamite there. And tonight for Monday Night Football, they've got their dinner specials are just a bunch of dollar items, dollar dogs, dollar fingers, dollar tacos, dollar pizza. For more information, follow them on IG, Oasis Bar and Grill, and we'll be out there tomorrow with Cofield and Company with a live show at 3 o'clock, a Tuesday show at Oasis Bar and Grill on Decatur, south of Trop.
15 seconds to air. Stand by, all cameras.
Ready with slow motion and isolated cameras in less than 5, in 3, 2, 1.
Take tape.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
Love it. Love the music. Gives you the feel of around like 1976.
Yeah.
A couple things were going on then. Willie finishing up high school.
Easy turbo.
Yeah, we're about the same age. Secondly, those were the days when you're like, Monday Night Football, the Raiders are on? This is great! Not good right now. I'm concerned for RJ Clifford. He's a regular in the 5 o'clock hour on Mondays to recap the Raiders game. I was looking up on social media. RJ, was your phone broken? You have no access to a computer? What the hell was going on? I didn't see, like, usually you tweet, I don't know, 25 times during Raiders games. I see nothing up here at RJ Clifford MMA.
I thought I'd play everyone a little trick on everybody and not like document a proof of life and just like with how the Raiders are playing, just like, oh my god, dude. Dare I think the worst? Dare I imagine that RJ's that depressed? Depressing time in Raider Nation, eh, boys?
Yes.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, 76. Oh, I mean, back when the Raiders were good. Last time they were, like, consistently really good. Winning Super Bowls.
Believe me, I'm in the same boat. I saw a number yesterday between the Jets and the Giants. Like, the last 36 games in prime time, I think straight up they're 4-32. I have to double-check that. That doesn't even seem possible. But, yeah, it's rough times right now for the Raiders. And the worst thing about yesterday's game is, like, they played well enough defensively to stay within hailing distance. The Rams are not the full Rams because Puka's down and Kupp's still not ready to go. They were in the game, couldn't finish drives, and then, you know, the end of the game is just inexplicable. I'm sorry, when you're down 20-12, I mean, I think I'd go for it out to, like, 4th-13. They got 9 yards to go. I don't think you can count on getting the ball back in a two-score game. You can't just execute a play, a field goal, to make it a two-score game.
Yeah, where you still need a touchdown.
Right.
Like, oh, yeah. Like, you still need to get into the end zone, Antonio Pierce. Like, oh, God. Now we don't have to get in the
end
zone.
Let me step in. I keep saying that wrong all day. It's a one-score game that you made into a one-score game, but you still need a touchdown. So, sorry, I keep framing it incorrectly. But, yeah, it's too risky because you don't know if you're going to get the ball back, and the field goal really did you nothing.
He really is, like, the epitome of defensive-minded coach from, like, 2004. Like, he really is like, oh, yeah, we'll just get, you know, have Daniel Carlson just crank out some field goals. We can lean on our defense to take us through this. It's like, I used to kind of look at him that way, but now it's just ineptitude. Well, we knew going into this season that Antonio Pierce was going to not be an in-game strategist. Like, there's no reason to think that. The only coach, it was only head coaching position was in high school at Long Beach Poly. Of course, it's tech. But we thought, okay, he'll learn on the job. He'll make it up in motivation. When he, that last nine-game stretch last season, they were number one in penalties. They got the turnovers under control. And then, boom, 4 turnovers against the Rams, 10 penalties for 80 yards. It's like, there's no one metric that shows coaching. There's not like one stat where it's like good or bad coaching. It's an amalgamation of things. But the closest thing is penalties. 10. Including that DJ Glaze false start that went from 4th and goal to a longer 4th and goal, and then got Antonio Pierce thinking, "Oh yeah, super conservative. Let's get really, really conservative here."
Yeah, that was another one of the things yesterday. And so you don't want to bury the Raiders because they are beat to hell. But, you know, part of being a good organization is you got to have backups. A guy like Glaze being forced into action as a rookie, that's tough. And I feel for Minshew and before that Akon, you're down most of your receivers. But I tell you what, they did find a way to get the ball to Brock Bowers. And maybe he needs to go into game. The game plan is, like, target him 22 times.
I don't think the injuries are an excuse. Like, obviously, it's an issue, right? Davante Adams want to go to the Jets. Yeah, that really has gone great so far, Davante. Good choice. But the turnovers, right? Gardner Minshew threw 9 interceptions in 15 games last season. He's thrown 8 in less than 6 games this season. Awful. Run game's gotten worse. The penalties, turnovers everywhere else. I mean, that's not like, oh, you can't blame it on, you know, Davante Adams being gone, Jacoby Myers being hurt, you know? Like, Zeus being injured, like that's not penalty. Like penalty doesn't, like, they didn't cause penalties. Those didn't cause turnovers. That didn't cause bad coaching decisions. Yeah, we could absolutely bury the Raiders because the things that we knew would be a problem still are, and the things we thought we can overcome have now become issues. I mean, Antonio Pierce is not getting this team disciplined, which is supposed to get us through a lot of things. We thought it'd be a smash mouth team, worst run game in football. It's the things we thought would be good are not working.
And defensively, it's kind of a mixed bag. I want to get both Willie's take on this and yours. RJ, you go first. RJ Clifford's with us from the Autumn Windbags. Defensively, you look at the overall numbers. They only give up 259 in total yardage, but it's the times when they kind of get fractured. And a lot of times, and I know it must suck on the defense, you're like, God, Gardner Minshew throws another freaking interception. But then you look up 3 plays later and the Rams are going into the end zone. They're not explosive. It seems like the times when the defense needs to step up the most are the times that in those moments are a little bit fractured.
And again, I think this is a lot of that falls on Antonio Pierce. He was supposed to be the guy to motivate this defense. Patrick Graham is getting dragged through the mud, the defensive coordinator. That is completely unfair. His players are in position. They're just not tackling. Like, the amount of broken tackles on this defense is staggering. Guys are in position. Like, yeah, Christian Wilkins is hurt and young secondary. I get it. But, like, watching Jack Jones, like, canter around running backs and just kind of, like, thinking maybe I'll tackle him. Watching your defensive tackles getting blown up. Like, it's brutal, man. Like, guys are in position playing smart. And last in takeaways, hallelujah. We got 1 interception on a lucky tip by Spillane into the hands of a DB. 3 takeaways. Through week 7, 3. That's atrocious. That is unacceptable. Cofield, you could be playing free safety in the NFL and get more than 3 takeaways just by having something fall on your lap. Like, balls just fall on the floor. Passes get tipped. It's insane to not get at least 1 per game in the NFL with how many bad offenses the Raiders have played.
Willie, is it unfair to get on the defense at all? I didn't let you answer the question. Is it unfair to get on the defense in some moments where, you know, they kind of break down? Especially after turnovers.
Well, it's baffling. It's somewhat of a contradictory defense, in my opinion, because with a guy like Pierce, with, you know, how he played and his mindset, it's a bit of an old school guy, and a guy like Max Crosby, sort of leading that defensive line, they blitz 7th most in the league in terms of blitzes per dropback, 28.2% of the time, yet their pressure per dropback, quarterback pressures, which is hurries, knockdowns, all sack plays, is 10th fewest at only 17.8%. So you're not getting the pressure as much as you should, yet on your blitzes per dropback, you're higher up. I mean, when you have a guy like Max Crosby, who I said earlier in the show is the star of the team, and now at this point, he has to be the pace of how this team plays. It's got to be one on defense based on what we're seeing with the offense. I think the pressure, you have to continue to put pressure in the backfield and continue to sort of hurry up your opposing quarterback. And they didn't do that. And it's troublesome when you're looking at a Rams team. RJ brought up the injuries not being an excuse, you know, with everything that they've gone through. The Rams are going through it. This is a banged up team. They made the Rams look good, and they didn't even play as good as, you know, they didn't play that good. So, you shouldn't feel bad about getting on the defense.
I think injuries do play a role, obviously, with Christian Wilkins, Malcolm Kuntz. This defense was supposed to be run by the defensive line, and Max Crosby can't do it all by, as good as he is. If anyone can, it's Max Crosby, but he can't do it all by himself. But that doesn't excuse the missed tackling. That doesn't excuse the lack of takeaways. So it's, yeah, the injuries are a problem, but it's exacerbating a problem that's already there.
RJ Clifford is with us. Let's talk about some overall themes and what the rest of the season is going to be like. First of all, the rest of the season. Desmond Ridder gets picked up as another quarterback option. I think if they want to win, and I know this is going to sound crazy, there aren't many Jameis Winston fans out there. I like Jameis. I don't think the Browns want Jameis to play because they don't want to win. So nothing against Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who's a Las Vegan, but I think they're going to roll him out there as long as he can stay healthy. I wonder what the goal is now for the Raiders. What do you think it should be, and how do you, you know, how do you kind of, how do you get guys to play hard, but then the ultimate goal is, you know what, let's not go out there and finish 8-9, 7-10 again.
It's so weird, right? Like, you want to use the tank word, and it just almost never exists in the NFL. Every single one of these guys is playing for their contract. You can't just halfway football. You're going to get hurt. If you're just kind of like, this isn't basketball. You can't tank that way. You can't just be like, all right, guys, we all know what we're doing here. We're trying to get the first overall pick. You really can't do it in the NFL. I mean, the last time it happened was Brian Flores' Dolphins when the owners wanted them to tank, and Flores just like won it. He just like willed his way to 8 wins. He's just like, no, I know how bad you want to tank. We just won't. Like, it's hard. It's weird to tank in the NFL, and we don't even really have like a tanking roster. The only really like older, expensive guy on the entire team was Davante Adams. Like, when you tank, it's when you trade away over 30 expensive players that are win now guys, not win 2 or 3 years from now guys. The only guy was Devontae. I mean, Christian Wilkins has got a 4-year contract. We want him as long as possible. Max Crosby's on the right side of 30. He's going to be around for a long time. Colton Miller, maybe you can move on from, but that's it. Like, we don't have a tanking franchise. So you're basically just saying like, all right, are we going to play our young guys? Like, there's this Carter Bradley up from the practice squad. Like, but what message are you sending? Right? Like that's what it comes down to. Like, Max Crosby would have an aneurysm if Antonio Pierce was like, all right, guys, we're going for the number one pick. Everyone just kind of like, you know, tip throw through the tulips on the next 8 games or something like that. Like, he would lose his mind. So do you like Hail Mary a quarterback to try to get to 8 wins, or you just play all the young guys and, you know, enjoy that top 3 pick? Like, you got to roll that dice.
This is going to sound crazy. I actually think they should play hard the rest of the way. I do think they should trade for a better quarterback if one is available. I think they should try to win games. I don't believe this quarterback draft has the quarterback that you have to be in the top 5 for. I think there are quarterbacks who you can draft, but they can serve both masters by developing guys, making them play hard, and winning games. I want to look ahead, right? And beyond that, the kind of the overall stories. Before I do that, though, let's give away 2 tickets to Cypress Hill. I'm sure an RJ favorite. 26, coming up this Saturday, downtown Las Vegas Event Center, dlvez.com. 2 tickets, Cypress Hill in Vegas, 364-1100, caller 7. So Autumn Windbags podcast, last time out, some of the headers. Let's go through them. No winners in the Davante Adams trade. What does that mean?
I don't think anyone's getting what they want out of it. We're not getting a second-round pick. It's a third. Davante Adams ain't become the second team All-Pro. They're not going to the AFC Championship game. Not happening. He had, what, 30 yards yesterday? Like, Aaron Rodgers isn't playing like the 2-time, you know, like the NFL MVP that he's been multiple times. That ain't happening. The Raiders didn't get, they were offered like 2 seconds was kind of the rumor in the offseason. Now they're going to get a third. They're not happy with it. I can't imagine Devontae's going to be happy being there. He left the Raiders because they were on a losing team, a dysfunctional franchise, a history of losing, so he goes to the Jets. Ah, okay. Yeah. That checks out. All right. Antonio Pierce is reportedly on a 2-year deal. Like, what's a third-round pick going to do to keep his job through this season and next? Like, who's happy? Who's happy with – who's ecstatic with this deal besides Aaron Rodgers?
That's it. That's it.
Tom Brady would never cheat NFL broadcasting rules. Never.
Never, right? Like, he's a part owner of the Raiders now, so he's not going to have – he's not going to go to any production meetings. He's not going to do any of that. He's a straight-line guy. He's not going to bend the rules to try to get W's. Not a chance. Fox is going to make sure he doesn't do any of that stuff, and Tom Brady's a man of dignity. Man of scruples.
Do we like Tom Brady now?
No.
Okay. I just wonder how Raiders fans feel about it. I can never truly like him as a Jets fan. He ruined my life for 20 years. In the National Football League. I got a chance to watch, listen a little more than any other game that Brady's been on. It wasn't great. I'm getting annoyed by the constant commercials of, like, I'm going to beat the non-believers. No one gave me a chance in broadcasting. Those promos, like, bro, you got a 10-year deal, basically sight unseen, for $375 million. Let's not act like you're some poor soul who was never given a shot.
He's been doing that. Like, the guy has more Super Bowl rings than he does on one hand, and he still, with a straight face, will tell you, no one believes in us. We're the underdogs. We're going to come out of nowhere and win these games. Like, with a straight face, Cofield, he would say that. Like, I guess it works, right? Like, who are we, like, hell, who are we to say, like, don't do that, Tom? Like, it clearly works. Like, the guy has to pretend like he's an underdog and no one believes in him to succeed. So, like, yeah, it's crap. It's not real. Like, everyone's rooting for you. The play-by-play broadcaster is getting more commercials than the actual lineup of the game. Like, more than who's actually playing the game, we're getting commercials about the play-by-play broadcaster who's telling us no one cares about him, that no one believes in him. A commercial for the broadcaster. Okay. Hey, it's working.
You can hear and watch videos of R.J. Clifford, the Auto Winbacks podcast, but also his full-time gig is SiriusXM on their combat channel, Fight Nation. Biggest fight news the last 10 days or so, Francis Ngannou. Tell people what happened and what's next for Francis.
So Francis Ngannou, the long story, right? 3 years ago, he had that big divorce with the UFC. The very, very, very rare time when an active UFC champion was able to leave the UFC as best in the world. Did two boxing matches, looked great against Tyson Fury, looked terrible against Anthony Joshua. Made about $25 million combined between the two of them. Finally, hallelujah, after over 3 years, got back into mixed martial arts. Fought Henan Fedetta in Saudi Arabia on Saturday and just demolished him. Double leg, ground and pound, 3.5 minutes in, done. Just absolutely like he hadn't missed a beat at 38 years old after major reconstructive knee surgery, after not fighting in the cage for 3 years, and the absolutely tragic loss of his two-year-old, very, very young son this year. Overcame all that and looked like he didn't miss a beat. I talked to his coach, Eric Nixick, today, actually. And we're all excited. He's back in mixed martial arts. Awesome. Back in. What's next? He's like, he'll probably do boxing. Like, oh, great. Another 3 years. We'll see him in MMA again when he's 41. But props to, he did something like, he really is a Hollywood movie. People say that about people all the time. But the way he came from Africa 8 times, he was sent back to Africa when he's trying to immigrate to France, became champion, got through the UFC contract, did boxing, made all this money, all the things he overcame. Incredible story, no matter where he lands. But man, I wish MMA's best heavyweight would, you know, MMA a little bit.
UFC 308 is on the way. It's in Abu Dhabi. I will say, maybe you'll back me up on this and tell me I'm a clown. This is a fight fans fight card. You may not be able to say many of the names because it's a lot of Shamayev and Anka Laiev. Is that how you say his name? Magomedov. There's two of those. I can't say it. There you go. But it looks like a really good card. And I know you guys have been going crazy about the 205 contender. In, is that how you say his name? Ankalaev?
Close? Magomed Ankalaev, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Just a word, just a little word of wisdom to MMA fans out there. Okay, casual people getting into mixed martial arts. If their last name ends in a V, they're probably like 18-1 and really, really good. You can't be able to pronounce it, but they're from the region of the world that cranks out awesome wrestlers. Main event, featherweight championship between Ilya Topuria and Max Holloway. You cannot make a better combat sports matchup in MMA, in boxing, in sumo wrestling, and power slap than Ilya Topuria, Max Holloway. It is the cream of the crop. Both fighters are coming off of knockout of the year nominees. Ilya Topuria knocked out in February. Alexander Volkanovski was number one pound for pound. Max Holloway knocked out Justin Gaethje at UFC 300 with the craziest moment we've seen this year, where at the very, literally, not hyperbole, literally the very last second of the round, knocks out Justin Gaethje after pointing to the ground and saying, let's throw down right here. They're both coming off incredible knockouts. If one of these fighters knock out the other one, they are up for Fighter of the Year, challenging Alex Bejeda and his 3 knockouts this year. They're both in their primes. Both have momentum. Max Holloway is a massive fan favorite. Ilya Topuria is a superstar in the making. He's just brewing as a superstar. Undefeated knockout artist. He's got the supermodel girlfriend, the sports car, salon quality hair, talks, acts, walks, smells like a superstar. And he's got his toughest matchup of his career, Max Holloway. Max Holloway, still only 33. A lot of miles, but still only 33. He can now get back and become a featherweight champion. Storylines, action-wise, X's and O's geeks like me. It's got absolutely everything, this main event. I can't wait for Saturday.
RJ, we're excited for it too. We'll talk to you, buddy.
Later, boys.
There he is, RJ Clifford. Right now, let's give away two tickets to Kevin Hart. He's doing a residency here. A couple tickets from Griffin, 364-1100. He's got a movie coming up, Willie, called Fight Night, The Million Dollar Heist. I didn't know about this story. It actually happened right after Muhammad Ali was in his comeback fight in 1970. So I saw a clip of it the other night on one of the late-night talk shows. Looks funny. Kevin Hart's funny. So we got stand-up tickets for Kevin Hart in town, 364-1100, 364-1100. Caller number 7. The show is at Resorts World. You can get your tickets right now. Actually, check that. Tickets on sale this Friday at AXS.com.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Mega Monday here, along with Monday Night Football. Mega Monday, they've got their 50-ounce fishbowl drinks. Those are dynamite. Buy one, get one. Willie's got great prizes. During two games, Chargers-Cardinals coming up after 6 o'clock. We got Ravens and Tampa going on as well. So good stuff here. You want to come down to party anytime at the Front Yard, especially on Friday nights. Dave Fabrico and his Raiders band, Raiders house band playing here. Halloween is going to be outstanding. You can already see all the decorations here. They love Halloween at Ellis Island, so you want to check in next week early and often. What'd you get? What'd you order?
I got, believe it or not, I have yet to have.
I always got a salad. You're very healthy.
You asking me or you telling me?
By the way, I just had an old friend come up. Not really a friend. He worked with us. Was one of the remote tech guys.
Yeah.
And was like, hey, you got some moves there, buddy. You're like, you're the new sports pig. It's like, all right, relax.
Well,
but I'm right. I mean, I say it.
I got Tony's rigatoni, but nice. That's the first time I'm getting it. Mateo usually gets that.
He does.
I got Tony's rigatoni with chicken. I got the garlic broccolini and an Italian chopped salad.
Whoa. All right. Okay.
We're going to have to split that, though.
Impressive. Well, I'm splitting it with you, or are we splitting it with Chris?
With Chris.
Okay.
You said you didn't want anything.
No, I didn't.
You just go right for the booze.
Yeah, have a beer. Let's get in the bag.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
You're back on Wednesday. You have so much to get out
been a long
about.
Day.
You really were laying it on thick there with Jack Williams, especially on. You are not a, hey, the fix is in. Hey, the big city, the big program is getting favors here. You really believe the WNBA did favors for the Libs?
Yeah. I don't think the script was written, and I don't think it was fixed, but, I mean, there are just a lot of things pointing to it. And I was tweeting it before the game. I mean, you know,
Engelbert, really? What was your shirt?
Kathy Engelbert had this black and white outfit, but it had the Statue of Liberty, if I'm not mistaken, on it. I mean, right afterwards.
Pretty. I'm not saying she's rooting for it. That sounds like a wardrobe malfunction.
The storyline.
Something pretty obvious. You don't wear a freaking Statue of Liberty on your shirt. You're the commissioner.
The storyline was pretty. I mean, it was, you know, New York winning it for the first time. Teaspoon was there. You know, it's New York. Frank Sinatra's in the background, New York, New York. What are you going to do for Minnesota? Prince is dead. The game's not there. I mean, no, I'm just saying. I mean, realistically, would they have rather Minnesota won it or New York won it? I mean, and look, we said it before. You do not wait. You don't let a game be decided by the officials, and you don't want the officials to decide the game. But at the same time, there were things, I mean, the Lynx had the Liberty, and Sabrina Ionescu was 1 of 19.
Terrible.
Brianna Stewart was like 4 of whatever. They were horrible. The Lynx should have taken advantage of that. They let Jonquel Jones keep the Liberty in the game. You don't put yourself in a position to allow the officials to be able to do what they did. The fact of the matter is,
I'm going to put you on the spot real quick. We don't have much time.
Okay.
Do you remember how long was the break between the end of the semis and the final?
It wasn't that long.
Could they have lengthened that a little bit to get the schedule so they're not playing on a freaking Sunday or tonight? Like tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday, they'd have a bigger spotlight. I didn't get that.
They probably could have figured it out, but, I mean, ESPN, you know, the networks have a lot to say, too. So it's tough. I still think that they got record numbers.
Right, but they could always be better. Willie's got great prizes tonight. Two VIP packages. And these are good packages. All you can drink for two. All you can eat for two. And we've got two of those, if you get what I'm saying. Willie sticking around. Front Yard, Ellis Island. One of the best Monday Night Football parties in town. Spectacular venue. Get on down here. Two games. These games mean a lot, even at this point in the season. Monday Night Football on the way.